Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. I'm Kate Puttock, your host for today, and for once, I have no co-host. It's just me today. No doubt, like me, you've been enjoying the wonderful weather we've been having. It's hard to believe it's November. But I hear the weather's due to cool down soon. But while it still feels like fall, you might have been wondering when you'll be getting a chance to get rid of all that brush and yard waste from fall cleanup in your yard. Well, my first guest today has some good news for you about that. Susan Gwiazda, the Public Relations Officer of the City of Ames, is here in the studio to give us her regular monthly update on important events and projects coming up in Ames. And we'll be hearing from her in just a minute. And later in today's program, we'll be hearing two different interviews on very important matters. Life and death matters, in fact. Both guests in the later part of the program today will be dealing in different ways with the difficult but very significant issues surrounding the whole topic of the end of life. First, Emmeline Linden from the Adult Services Department of the Ames Public Library will be talking about two different programs starting at the library this month, which both deal with this topic of end of life and mortality in general. Each program comes at the subject differently, though, one through a series of lectures or presentations followed by discussion, and the other by means of a book discussion group. And we'll be hearing about some fascinating books in that part of the program. I've read some of them, and I'm already a fan. And Joni Williams, my final guest today, will also be talking about end-of-life issues from her professional perspective as a palliative care nurse. So stay tuned for that. But first, I'd like to welcome you, Susan Gwiazda, and thank you for being a regular guest on Local Talk.
Oh, it's good to be here. I always enjoy these early morning visits.
Well, you're going to tell us about how we can clean up our yards, I hope, and a lot of other things, too.
Absolutely. It's going to be a very busy November here at the City of Ames and throughout the entire community. I always like this opportunity to give residents a heads up on what's coming up this week, this month. And a lot of people have been out doing yard work. You mentioned the lovely weather we've been having, and I know that a lot of people have been raking leaves, and they're looking forward to our second fall Yard Waste Free Day this Saturday. It is 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Chamness Technology. That is south of town, and that is the location it's been at for now 3 years. People who have traveled south of town may notice that there's been some construction along University Boulevard to the south, and you need to take that into consideration when you are traveling there this Saturday. Slow down, follow the cones, and work your way through the construction site. You can get to Chamness Technology just like you've done other years. It'll just take a little bit of time and patience. It is an active construction zone, and we are allowing traffic through there just for this event. So gather your leaves together, get them bagged up, secure them in your vehicle, and go ahead and head south on University Boulevard, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Chamness Technology. The address is 26107 530th Avenue. That actually is University Boulevard. As you continue south, it turns into 530th. And then as you exit the yard waste site this year, we'll have you exit to the right to keep the traffic flowing one way in, one way out. So that is a little bit different. But if we all work together, I'm sure it'll be a very successful event this year. If you miss this Yard Waste Free Day, which is special because it includes brush, but if you miss this Saturday's Yard Waste Free Day, you have two more chances, Saturday, November 21st and Saturday, December 5th. We've really tried to stretch those out into the season. We know there's still a fair number of leaves on the trees. It's like I said, it's been a pleasant fall. And we know sometimes it takes a while for all those leaves to fall and everybody to collect them. Those upcoming Yard Waste Free Days are non-football Saturdays, so we take into consideration people's schedules as well. And we found that last year, even going into early December, was okay. You could still get out and do some yard waste. It hadn't snowed yet, but we're going to go ahead and try that again. So those last the last 3 days would be this Saturday, November 7th, followed by Saturday, November 21st, followed by Saturday, December 5th.
And they can take brush also on all those
on
days.
Just this one.
Just the first one. So this is
just
your last
this
chance.
One. Saturday is the free brush day.
So last chance for brush, folks.
It's a big one.
Do they compost these leaves? That's what Charmness technology does, doesn't it?
Yep, they're a composter, so we've been very pleased. They've been a good partner with us, and they're pretty innovative, and they really want these days to go smoothly. We can get up to 1,400 vehicles on a free day that includes brush, so just this Saturday. You might want to take your time. Sometimes people who try to get there at 8 a.m. actually end up waiting the longest. If you wait a little bit, maybe go around lunchtime. It seems tends to thin out a little bit. So a little strategy and when you bring your leaves might help help it go a little bit more quickly. And then again, just use caution through the construction zone. University Boulevard is still in the process. The roundabouts are still being completed. And so we want everybody to travel safely through there.
Yeah, and that's something else you wanted to talk about, wasn't it?
Well, we've got lots of stuff to talk about. One of the things I just want to get a little business out of the way first is just holiday closings. November is a busy month for holidays. We have our first holiday closing coming up Wednesday, November 11th, not that far away. That's for Veterans Day. City Hall and many city departments and divisions will be closed on Veterans Day, but there are a few exceptions. The community center and City Hall stays open, so if you want to go to the gym that day or get a workout in, you're still good. SciRide buses remain on their regular schedule. The Ames Public Library does remain open that day, and the Resource Recovery Plant will still accept garbage that day, although the administrative offices will be closed. Also, the Ames Patriotic Council does have their annual Veterans Day program at City Hall on Veterans Day. That's 11 a.m. on Wednesday, November 11th, in the City Hall Auditorium, and that is an event sponsored by the Ames Patriotic Council. We do know that Mayor Campbell will be there to give the welcome. And also, of course, a big holiday in November is Thanksgiving, and City Hall is closed both Thursday, November 26th for Thanksgiving and Friday, November 27th, the day after. So it is a bit of an extended holiday. And you want to make sure that you visit City Hall the Wednesday or the Monday afterwards if you have business to do. Although we have tried to move much of our business online, so hopefully that will not be an inconvenience for people.
And there's the sculpture exhibition. And
yeah, we have outdoor sculpture exhibition downtown. This is a long-standing annual program where the Public Art Commission judges sculptures. They select a list of finalists, and those finalists go on display in downtown Ames. There's six sculptures this year. We have a map at City Hall. There's a map on our website, and you can go through and look at the different sculptures. They're really, really fun this year. One of them was just named Best of Show. That's called Spring Awakenings. It is located very close to Tom Evans Park. And we encourage residents to look at the sculptures and really enjoy them, because if they're interested, they can go on our website, cityofames.org/PAC, which stands for Public Art Commission, so /PAC, and you can fill out an application to request one of these sculptures in a public place, such as in your neighborhood. If you have a cul-de-sac or some type of entry feature to your subdivision, you could request a sculpture be placed in your neighborhood. Perhaps you live next to a park. You could request any sculpture be placed in public space that's accessible to the public to have that sculpture in your neighborhood. I know a very common or a very popular sculpture last year or a few years ago was a lot of people refer to it as the fish sculpture, but it's in front of the entrance to Stonebrook. Stonebrook subdivision in North Ames. There are other sculptures located around various parks in Ames that have been requested by residents who really, really those sculptures spoke to them. Spring Awakenings, I encourage people to look at that right near Tom Evans Park. It's really a beautiful sculpture. It's really, it's not very abstract. It's it looks very much like a leaf, and it has birds. Very pretty, very simple. And I just have a feeling
That's not the one with red birds.
Yes,
on it.
That is.
Okay.
Yeah.
So most of them are along there on Main Street.
On Main Street. And
right.
That's typically where they are. Sometimes you'll get some of them on Burnett or a spur a little bit. City Hall usually has one in front as well. We do have one this year as well in front of City Hall. It's at 5th and Clark. It's it looks like a gas can. I think it's called Juice Box. And it's very literal. So it's a fun one.
Now, have these always been taken by the different neighborhoods in the past?
One or two, usually each year.
What happens if they're not?
The Public Art Commission only has enough money to fund one or two. So every year, one or two is purchased.
Oh, I see.
And then the rest of them, basically those are sculptures on loan. The artists come and take them back.
Oh, I see. They're just a loan at the moment.
Yeah.
Okay.
So some other things. I'm going to go back a few weeks and talk about a service that we have here, Story County, Iowa Alerts. It's a service that residents can sign up for. If there's been an emergency, they'll get contacted. A couple of weeks ago, we had a...
Contacted by phone.
By phone. Mm-hmm. Actually, Story County, Iowa Alerts is an emergency system that contacts residents by phone, text, or email to their home cell phone or computer. So a few weeks ago, we had a very unusual event in Ames, and that was we had a boil water alert, and we had to target particular residents in Ames and tell them that we had some concerns about the water, and it wasn't community-wide. It was just for this small geographic area, and ended up being about 150 residential properties. What we were able to do with Story County, Iowa Alerts is use GIS or a geographic system, software system, to target just those blocks affected and contact those people. However, the drawback to Story County, Iowa Alerts is that you have to be in the system. And if you don't have a land phone, like a lot of people today don't have a land phone, or if their land phone is unlisted in the white pages, or if they've moved in the last year, they will not be in the system. So we encourage everybody to go to our website, cityofames.org, and look for the red Story County, Iowa Alerts button on the right-hand side of the page, or simply go to cityofames.org/alerts and make sure that you're in the system and you can sign up and put, if you don't have a land phone, for example, I don't have a land phone, so you put your cell phone number in and you ask, it asks you, do you want to be contacted by text or voicemail or email? You have all those options. I have other people than me in my home, so I signed up my spouse and my children, and that means that if there's an alert specific to our geographic area, we'll get that information immediately.
And the phones of all those people you mentioned.
Yes, yeah. All those people. And so you connect your phone number with an address so you can use that geographic component. That was a very helpful tool for us during the water main break and the subsequent boil water alert. But we would like to get more people signed up for Story County, Iowa Alert. So we're really pushing it. It's a service we've had for years. And sometimes we get complacent and forget about it, or people move and they need to reassociate that information. So it will only be used in emergencies. We don't try to solicit you for other events or...
How about big events like tornadoes and things like that?
Well, Story County, Iowa Alerts is a little limited in that to notify the entire community of Ames, it would take hours. So an immediate event like that probably isn't a good use of Story County, Iowa Alerts.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
But a boil water alert, a flood, an evacuation, a large incident that's going to cause, that needs, requires detours. If we can limit it to a certain number, the larger the group we have to call, the longer it takes. So it's a really good tool. We're very pleased with it.
But just to clarify, if people have a landline and they haven't moved for years and they're not unlisted...
They're already in the system. You can certainly check, but you're already in the system. So it's a really good tool, and I encourage everybody to check it out and sign up if they have the chance. Some other things that we have coming up, if we want to talk about construction, we mentioned construction with University Boulevard. I would guess by now that most people have maybe noticed that 6th Street has closed. That's the street that runs right near Brookside Park in front of the skate park. And there's a bridge there that goes over the Squaw Creek. That bridge is going to be replaced. So the street's closed because the bridge will be taken out. So for many people, that is their main route into campus. It is a Cyride route, so we've had to do a lot of, we've done some rerouting. There is a detour. The detour is specific to vehicles,
and also to pedestrians and bikes. So because we're aware of the amount of traffic that that street gets, we are rerouting the pedestrians and bikes actually through Brookside Park. So their detour is not as significant, but I understand that when you're walking or biking, any detour is significant. However, we've detoured bike and foot traffic over the pedestrian bridge through Brookside Park, and you'll reconnect with 6th Street and continue on your way. For vehicle traffic, we've diverted that traffic to Lincoln Way. So that's a little bit more significant of a detour. And this is a long project. This will take up to 9 months to complete. And the contractor took advantage of the very nice fall weather and really tried to get a jump on this project, a little bit even ahead of what we had anticipated. That's good for the project because it gets it moving quickly. I know that some people were taken aback and a little bit surprised. We did put some signs up there, and I bet by now that those new traffic patterns have been established. But by getting an early start this fall, it will help the project stay on schedule. And the goal is to get this done before fall semester 2016. So a big project, interesting one to watch.
Okay.
We do have some other smaller projects. Again, if anybody wants to check on the status of a construction project, a street project in their area, we redirect people to our website. You can go to cityofames.org/construction. It's a great place to get updates on projects. A lot of them are starting to wrap up. We can't always work into November, but it's been a beautiful November, so work will continue. People might have noticed along 13th Street, there's a retaining wall replacement project going up close to the Furman Aquatic Center. So that has closed one lane of traffic that is eastbound. But westbound traffic continues as normal. Eastbound traffic is down to one lane just where the retaining wall is being replaced. So it's a popular street, so I'm sure a lot of people have seen that.
Right. Well, that's certainly a lot of stuff.
Yeah, we have always things going on.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, if anybody needs updates or information, our website is available 24/7, cityofames.org. We always direct people to there. We're active on Facebook and Twitter, and we encourage people to check those resources for the latest information about the City of Ames.
Well, thank you very much, Susan Guayazda. Susan is the Public Relations Officer of the City of Ames, and she comes in regularly every month to tell us about what's going on in our community.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Thank you. On KHY Community Radio at 89.1 FM, this is Local Talk, where we bring you the people's stories and events in Central Iowa. I'm Kay Puttock, your host for today. And now for something completely different. For the rest of today's show, we'll be exploring the difficult but important topic of mortality and end-of-life issues. Really, this embraces a whole cluster of related topics, and my next guest comes at this topic from two different perspectives, as we'll hear in this recorded interview. My guest is Emmeline Linden from the Adult Services at the Ames Public Library, and she's here to talk about a series of discussions and events. Well, there are presentations followed by discussions, right?
Most of them, yes.
Yeah, coming up at the library. And this is sort of coupled with a book reading group, a book reading discussion group.
There are some
and
parallels.
The presentation and discussion is called On Mortality.
Yes.
And the book reading group is called?
They meet annually, and just this year they're doing mortality mm-hmm. and memory, but they're called Let's Talk About It.
So the two are sort of going side by side, but the presentation discussion, that just lasts for the month of November, I
Correct.
Believe.
Yep, Monday
Whereas
nights.
the book discussion, since you have a month to read the book, mm-hmm. how long will that go?
That will be going for 4 months starting in November. So they'll meet November, December, January, February.
Okay. And the discussion group meets on Monday at night. At what time is that?
7 p.m.
Okay. And the book discussion group?
The book discussion is Tuesday evenings. The first one will be November 17th at 7 p.m.
Okay. So let's start talking about the presentations and events. I believe you already had the first one.
Yes, we did. We had a panel of religious leaders in Ames come and talk about their faith traditions and rituals associated with death
mm-hmm.
and their beliefs about what happens after death.
And about how many people were attending that?
We had over 20.
Oh, so a lot of people are interested in death.
Yes.
Yes. And would you like to summarize how that went? Or
I think it went quite well. We gave each of them some time to just give a general overview of traditions and rituals, beliefs about what happens after death. And then we had time for questions from the attendees.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was very informative, and it was interesting to hear all of those different views stated in the same venue.
Yeah, what faith traditions were presented?
We had someone from Islam, Christianity, Buddhism, and also someone from the UU representing people of no faith, the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in Ames.
Okay, who was that?
Kent McCusick.
Oh, it was the minister.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Did the person representing Buddhists talk about rebirth or that kind of thing?
Yes, it was the Pure Land variety of Buddhism. And so she spoke about being reborn into the Pure Land and then reborn on Earth, or choosing to become a bodhisattva or becoming a Buddha.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So were any surprises there?
I am not as familiar with Jewish beliefs and practices as some of the other traditions. And so it was interesting to hear about their rituals associated with death. They don't emphasize what happens to us after we die. The emphasis is on living well and contributing to your society and your congregation, and it's not about what happens after death.
So in terms of the funerals and their death rituals, their emphasis would be on the people that are alive and dealing with their grief and so on?
Yes.
Okay, so that one's already happened. Let's talk about the ones that are coming up. There's a very useful one coming up on the 9th of November.
Yeah,
For caregivers.
We're having Jolene Filo come and speak about everything that you need to keep in mind when caring for someone with a long-term illness. And so she will have some handouts available for people and information about how to approach things when you are speaking with insurance and what paperwork you need to keep together.
Yeah, she's the author of a book called Caregiver's Notebook.
Right. And she's a local author. She is from Boone, and she has cared for a few family members over the years who have had serious illnesses. Yes.
So she's just an ordinary citizen who's experienced being a caregiver.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of those topics interested me. She called it taming the paperwork, just taking care of health insurance forms can be quite a lot of paperwork.
Yes, it definitely can be. And keeping all of that in one place can be very helpful.
Right. Oh, and I noticed one of the topics she will be speaking about is creating emergency packets. What does that mean?
It's just all of the information that you need to have together if someone needs to be rushed to the hospital, that sort of thing.
Or when they shouldn't be rushed to the hospital, maybe.
Mm,
That's when we're getting into palliative care and so on, understanding people's last wishes.
Right.
And we will be going into palliative care in more detail later in the program. But now let's talk about what's coming up on November the 16th.
We're having Bonnie Ripagan from the Mary Greeley Medical Center Hospice come and talk about grief on the holidays.
Presumably, because if you at Christmas or Thanksgiving, someone that you usually celebrate with at Christmas or Thanksgiving or whatever has died.
Holidays
that
can particularly hard when you're grieving.
Right. Okay, now let's get back to the practical side, which is coming up on November the 23rd.
Correct. We will be having sort of a panel come speak about everything you need to think about when a loved one dies.
Is terminally ill.
Yes. So we'll have someone from the Mary Greeley Medical Center again. It's a social worker. And then a representative from Adams Funeral Home and Victoria Fielmeyer from Nymaster Good. And they will all be coming to talk about the sorts of things you need to know for when someone is terminally ill and you're preparing.
And Nightmaster Good are attorneys, I believe.
Correct.
So the attorney will be talking about what kind of things?
Living wills and all of the, again, paperwork.
Power of attorney,
that, that you would need to have in place.
Yes. For example, I suppose if someone cannot make medical decisions for themselves, that would be a legal matter for legal power of attorney. Mm-hmm. And the person from Mary Greeley, I believe, will be talking about hospice.
It's a social worker for the the practical side. So, I mean, it's more about the end-of-life types of things that but it's the paperwork stuff, the practical stuff, not necessarily hospice.
So this is sort of the business side and the legal side of it.
Right.
On the 23rd.
And what you need to think about in preparing funeral, the types of things you need to have spoken about with your family members.
Right.
The palliative care one is November 30th, and that one will be about hospice and palliative care.
And the last, your last guest is Joni Williams from Mary Greeley, who'll be talking about palliative care. And I do have an interview with Joni Williams, so we can listen to that. And if people want to hear more from Joni, or talk to her and ask her questions themselves, which is very useful, they can go to your meeting at the library, which will be on the 30th of November, I believe.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, so that's the presentations and discussions. Let's talk about it, mm-hmm. which is the reading group.
Right. So the November 17th discussion book is Being Mortal, Medicine and What Matters in the End by Atul Gawande. He's a physician, and so he wrote the book partially, I think, because of his experiences with his father at the end of his life and his realization that he did not always handle, as a physician, those difficult conversations that physicians have to have with people near the end of their lives. Very well written. I mean, it's really interesting to hear from a physician about the topic.
When you say he didn't, although he was a physician, he didn't make the best decisions. Can you give us an example of that without spoiling things too much?
Well, there's one example that he gives of speaking with a new mother who had cancer. And she was trying to get into a trial for, I think she had more than one type of cancer, and she was trying to get into a trial for treatment for one of the types of cancer that she was dealing with. And he made some comment about how maybe it would shrink the tumor that she had too. There was no chance that this trial was going to help shrink the tumor that she had, but he wanted to give her some hope.
So he said something that wasn't true.
Right. And just the fact that the doctors try to give hope when maybe there isn't any, and they need to be preparing people for that fact.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, it used to be like, certainly my parents' generation, and of course I'm a lot older than you, but I gather they tried to hide the fact that people were dying. And of course, people aren't stupid. They knew it. And to have everyone around them trying to deceive them just added, they think, now to their suffering.
Right.
Yeah. So a physician even wasn't sort of telling the truth.
Right. I think part of the problem that he speaks about is that he was never really taught how to have those difficult conversations how to handle those situations. And I think they're doing a better job now in medical school of making sure that physicians are prepared for that kind of thing. But still a difficult conversation to have, and people don't always handle it well.
Actually, people do not handle... they don't handle death well. People often find it difficult to talk to someone who's been bereaved, I think.
Yeah.
They avoid them because they don't know what to say. So it's helpful for everyone to think about this. In fact, you don't have to say... I mean, I experienced this when I was widowed at a young age. Some people say, well, don't worry about Mary. She told me she doesn't know what to say to you. And I think she can just say hello, you know, And if she wants to refer to what's happened, she can say she's sorry. But to cut people dead because you don't know what to say to them, which does happen quite a lot.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So it's a problem that still people don't know quite how to deal with this, although it has got a lot better. So that's the first book. What about the next one?
H is for Hawk is the title, and the author's
right.
Name
I just finished reading that myself. It's terrific.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's very interesting. I learned a lot about T.H. White and falconry and all sorts of things.
It's a beautifully written book. Yes, it's a book about a young woman who's... I forget exactly what her position was, but she got some kind of position. I think it was Cambridge University, maybe it was Oxford. But anyway, but she wasn't like a full professor or anything like that. And it was a position that she was about to lose. It was a sort of temporary position. And her father had died. And to help deal with the grief, she'd had quite a lot of experience with falconry, but she'd never trained a goshawk. And it's about training a goshawk. And it's an incredibly beautifully written book.
Yeah.
You learn a lot about, as you say, T.H. White, who the man that wrote The Once and Future King about King Arthur, who knew a lot about falconry. Yes, very interesting. Knew a lot about falconry also.
Right.
So that's sort of, I mean, the main topic is not grief in that. Maybe it is. It's one of the topics. There's a lot about hawks in there and the natural world and so on. But grief is sort of an underlying theme in that too. Okay.
And then in January, I believe the book is Redeployment by Phil Clay, which is a collection of short stories. It won a major award, I think the National Book Award in 2014. And they're fictional short stories about Iraq and Afghanistan. He's a veteran, and he chose to tell his story using fiction.
Mm-hmm. But they're all stories about redeployment.
About serving.
Okay, so
some of them are actually set during the war, some are set after.
Uh-huh.
It's a variety.
So though it's called redeployment, they're not all about being deployed for the second time.
Right.
Right, okay.
And then the final book for that series is the Oliver Sacks biography, which I haven't read yet, but...
Oh, well, that's recently come out, yes.
Right, yeah. So that it should be a good discussion mm-hmm.
yeah.
on Oliver Sacks.
Oliver Sacks, another fascinating man.
Yes, very.
Yeah, I've got several Oliver Sacks books. I haven't read that one yet. But... Mm-hmm. Okay, well, this sounds like two very interesting series that are coming up, and they're sort of linked. But you can certainly, I believe, enjoy one of them without the other. So you can come to the book group without going to the discussion lecture series or vice versa.
Definitely.
This is something interesting and timely and difficult, but very necessary coming up in Ames at the library. I've been talking to Emmeline Linden of the Adult Services at the Ames Public Library. Thank you so much, Emmeline.
Thank you for having me.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Kay Patrick, your host for today, and now we continue with our difficult but important topic of mortality and the end of life. We'll hear our final interview relating to this topic. This is Joni Williams, who will be giving one of the presentations at the library, but there's an in-depth interview with her here. So you'll get a chance to listen to this, and later you could go to the library and discuss things with her, if you wish, and ask questions. So let's hear the interview with Joni Williams. My guest today is Joni Williams, who's the Palliative Care Coordinator at Mary Greeley Hospital. And she's come to talk to us today about palliative care and a little bit about hospice too, which comes under the umbrella of palliative care. Now, the overwhelming message, as far as I can understand, is going to be about communication, communicating these issues. So welcome very much, Joni. So glad you could come talk to us about these important issues.
Thank you for having me.
So why didn't you explain to us, first of all, exactly what palliative care is and how hospice fits into that and so on?
Palliative care overall is the umbrella that optimizes quality of life. We anticipate, prevent, and treat suffering of people with chronic illness, possibly life-threatening illness. They could have acute problems going on, and we want to make them as comfortable as possible and provide the best quality of life they can have.
So it's pain management, basically.
Symptom management.
Symptom management.
It could be pain. It can be restlessness, it can be anxiety, it can be nausea, vomiting, it can just be overall emotional assistance and suffering. So we try to address all of those things, whether it's sitting and talking and working on coping skills, or if it's a medication requirement for treatment.
Well, later in the month, I am going to have one of your colleagues in to talk specifically about hospice. But since there is perhaps in people's minds a bit of confusion about this, and since they are so closely connected, can you talk a bit more about the connection between the two and what palliative care that you're concerned with is not? In other words, what we're going to hear about later in the month.
Definitely.
When we get in more into hospice.
Sure. Palliative care, if you think about it, is the whole umbrella. Hospice is a piece of palliative care, but not all palliative care is hospice care.
Because not everyone that needs palliative care is at the end of life.
Correct.
And hospice is about the end of life.
Correct. There are two main differences between general palliative care and hospice care. The first of those being with hospice services, if the disease progresses as the doctor expects it to, life expectancy would be 6 months or less, and there cannot be ongoing aggressive curative type treatment. That's hospice. With palliative care, we focus on the same philosophy of comfort and quality, but there's no limitation on life expectancy, and people that I service can be seeking aggressive and curative treatment, and some people do survive, especially if it's an acute situation. They do fully recover from whatever the problem is that they're having.
So, but people could be in your care, in palliative care, and then, this is the right word, graduate or progress to hospice later.
Correct.
Yes.
And honestly, that's a lot of what I do see with people in the hospital, that I'm kind of the bridge between dealing with their progressive diseases to the point where they've made the choice that they just don't want to do things anymore and do eventually progress into hospice service.
Okay, so it does sort of progress into end-of-life issues.
Yes, yeah.
And that's where the communication comes in, I presume.
Definitely. Communication is key, and that is a lot of what I do and a lot of what palliative care is, discussing the options, discussing the decisions that can be made regarding your health care, making sure that you know there are options available. The doctors are there to prescribe, to try to cure, to try to make things the best they can. But that's not always the best thing for the patients,
right. Depending
on what their goals are. A lot of what we talk about and discuss is, if this were to happen, I would be okay to have a feeding tube or a breathing tube or whatever the technology may be. But some people,
some people
not quality.
Yeah,
right.
And these are things that have to be talked about and that people find very difficult to talk about often. Now, I suppose it's necessary to talk about this with your loved ones, your close family. Also important to talk about it with your physicians. And this is where you come in, I believe. You help people communicate with their loved ones about these issues.
That's correct.
Now, I know you can't talk about specific cases in the sense of identifying people by name, but could you give us some examples of some cases that you've dealt with where this kind of care and this kind of communication has made a difference? A typical kind of situation, so that it's more real and concrete to people.
Right. A number of people that I see have heart failure, congestive heart failure, COPD. COPD is chronic obstructive pulmonary disease.
Right. Okay. So they can't breathe, basically.
They can't breathe, right. Respiratory failure, people that are on dialysis for kidney failure. And generally, I do see these people when they are actually in the more advanced stages of these diseases. And the patients are maybe thinking that they don't want some of these aggressive things, but they are not afraid, but they're just a little leery to tell their family because they feel like their family maybe thinks they're giving up. I hear that a lot.
Right.
I don't want them to think I'm giving up. So I come into play. I talk with the patients. I become a link between the patients and their families. I open up that conversation and help have that conversation, kind of get the groundwork laid as to what the patients are wanting, what they don't want, what gives them quality, and help them relay that information to the family. When we kind of have that groundwork laid, then I kind of become the bridge between the patient and family and the physician or the medical team.
Because some of these treatments can be very, painful, and you might not want to spend the last few years of your life just undergoing these kind of treatments.
Exactly. But a lot of people, quality to them is being home with their family, not spending time in the physician's offices, in the hospital, having treatments, having tests done, having blood work drawn, and that's okay. A typical patient that I see at the hospital will have chronic disease. Let's use the example of congestive heart failure.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been in the hospital 2 or 3 times in the last year. And now we're getting into more complications, requiring more hospitalizations, more physician visits. And that's not necessarily quality life
right. That's
for them.
That's how they want to spend the last few years, maybe.
Right.
Or a few months or whatever it
right.
is.
Right. So I kind of come into the picture, help them to talk about what their options are. Let them know they have decisions. They can make those decisions. The physicians, they don't necessarily have the time to sit and talk about what patient goals are. Kind of where do you draw the line in the sand of saying enough is enough?
Right.
And that's where a lot of my conversation goes. And it doesn't matter. I tell people I could have 10 people in the exact same situation, and I'm going to have 10 different rules of thought on the right. what their wishes would be.
10 different goals.
Yes.
Now, goals are important, I understand. You tend to think that when people are at the end of life or have got a chronic illness, they've run out of options. But in fact, there are important decisions to be made and goals that they can have. Can you give examples of some of those goals?
I've had people tell me, I want to live every last minute that I can. And of course, for those people, we're going to do everything that needs to be done.
With tubes up my nose and whatever, and then I'll do it.
Yeah. Right, right.
So that's their goal.
Yep. And that's what they're willing to put themselves through, their bodies through, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
I've had other people at the complete other end of the spectrum that say, I don't want to be in the doctor's office. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that. I'm going to stay home. I want to be with my grandkids. I want to be with my family, whatever it may be.
And I want to be as comfortable as I can.
And be as comfortable as I can. And whatever happens down the road happens.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got everybody in between.
So these are people often, they might, in the hospital, they choose to go home because essentially there's nothing else that they want to have done at the hospital.
Right.
And then when they go home, then that would be called hospice. They'd be, because hospice isn't necessarily a place. They'd move into a different, but they'd have hospice-type care. In other words, making them comfortable and so on.
Correct. To backtrack just a minute, palliative care and hospice services focus on the same philosophy. It's quality of life.
Right.
And everybody is individual. Everybody has an individual view on what gives their life meaning, what gives their life quality. Hospice is specific for end of life, 6 months or less. But it is all focused. Hospice is not a place, and palliative care is not a place. It's the philosophy of care, providing comfort, having that quality.
It can be a place. So, I mean, it's hospice house here in Ames.
It can be a place.
Mm-hmm.
It just so happens here in Ames, we do have the hospice house. So if people talk about going to hospice, that's generally what they're thinking. However, hospice can be provided in the hospital, in a patient's home, in a nursing mm-hmm. home. I know they've provided services to homeless people, shelters.
Right.
They go to wherever that patient is that is requiring that mm-hmm. specialized care.
And in each case, you'd help them talk about goals and so on.
Right. And again, those goals could be personal, the quality, what gives them quality, what gives their life meaning. Huh. Could be waiting for a grandchild to be born. It could be waiting 2 months from now, a granddaughter is getting married. It might be seeing somebody that's supposed to be coming back to Iowa. And whether it's palliative or hospice care, that's what we work on. If we need to do some maybe a little more aggressive treatment or aggressive technology to try to prolong that life, that's what we do. Palliative care, hospice care is not just giving up. And that seems to be what I hear a lot.
Oh, that's a misunderstanding people have, is it?
It is definitely a misunderstanding. Sometimes the treatments or the care, the medical care, the benefit that you get from that is not going to outweigh the complications that you can have.
Right.
So that becomes a balancing act. There are some people that have chemotherapy and they end up in the hospital a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks at a time because of side effects from that chemotherapy.
And in fact, some people do in fact get better from hospice care because they're being very carefully tended and they have a recovery. That happens sometimes, I believe.
Yes, it does. And there is documentation out there. Studies have shown that people that have hospice care and palliative care actually survive longer and have better quality of life.
Than people that have a lot of interventions.
Correct.
My goodness.
Yeah. There is a need for it, and that kind of goes along then with getting paperwork in place.
Right, exactly.
I think it's really, really important to have those conversations if you have a chronic illness. Have those conversations with your physician, with your family, and then to get the appropriate documentation in place. Those can be your advanced directives.
Yeah, that's something very important that I want to emphasize. Advanced directives, and they're usually on a special color paper, so it's noticeable, right?
Those are the IPOSTs, and that is a fairly new document to Iowa. And IPOST stands for Iowa Physician Ordered Scope for Treatment.
Iowa Physician Ordered Scope for Treatment, IPOST.
Yes. And those are they need to be on a conspicuous color of paper and posted in a conspicuous place.
On the refrigerator. Your deposit box.
Exactly. I think the instructions say it should be on a salmon-colored paper.
Oh, okay.
But I've seen them on a goldenrod-colored paper, something that's going to stick out and going to draw your attention. But overall, advanced directive could include your living will, your medical power of attorney, your out-of-hospital do not resuscitate. And to break those down a little bit, a living will is specific to what you're allowing to have done to your body.
Right.
It doesn't have anything to do with finances, with your personal belongings, even though it says will. It's the living will. And it says that if I'm in a persistent vegetative state, it's okay to withdraw treatment or to withhold certain treatment that is just going to prolong the suffering or prolong the outcome. Medical power of attorney is specific to somebody that is able to make medical decisions for you in the event that you're not able to make them for yourself.
So when you can see that coming down the road, say you've just been diagnosed with Alzheimer's, but you're still in pretty good shape, you might choose someone to take over those kind of decisions.
That's exactly right. And again, medical power of attorney is specific to medical decision making. Mm-hmm. It does not have anything to do with your finances, making any of those other decisions for you as far as what happens to your belongings, to your investments, right, and those things. It is strictly medical care.
Now, in choosing someone to do that, is it a good idea to choose your spouse, for example?
It can be, but I always tell people that the spouse may not be the best person.
Right.
They may be too emotionally close or attached to the situation. When you're deciding on a medical power of attorney, it's important to have somebody that is going to be able to make that decision for you or to make those decisions for you. A spouse is not always that best person. They're too close.
Yeah, and they might be grateful to have someone else there to discuss it with and to take the final step.
Right, right.
Whatever it might be.
Because generally, when it gets to that point, those decisions are hard decisions to be making. It's not just a matter of, oh, shall we give this or shouldn't we give this? If it's to a point where that medical power of attorney is needing to step in, they're needing to make some really hard decisions. And
yeah, some concrete things, something that came up when I first heard you speaking, discussion. Suppose you're at home with someone, you know, for example, they've got a terminal illness, they haven't maybe got long to live, they wanted to come home, they've made it quite clear they didn't want any interventions, they wanted to be at home with their family, and then they suddenly sort of drop down into a chair and apparently quit breathing. What do you do? All your instincts say call an ambulance, but in that situation, maybe you should not call an ambulance.
That's correct.
Yeah, why not? I mean, can you explain why not?
Well, if that were to happen, the paramedics that come out and say if you did not have these documents in place, in particular the I-post that we talked about, paramedics come out, they assess you, find that you're not breathing or you don't have a heartbeat, they are legally obligated to do everything that they can to revive you and to resuscitate you, which would include putting a breathing tube down, getting you in the ambulance, sending you to the hospital.
Maybe tearing all your clothes off and pumping you on the chest.
Could be pumping you on the chest to get your heart going again, medications to try to get you going again. And the outcome is you'll end up in the intensive care unit at the hospital with tubes.
Which is exactly what you said you didn't want.
Exactly.
Just because people that loved you at that crucial moment, they
you panic.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
right.
That's the normal response, is to panic like that. The I-post is the document that tells the paramedics, we've talked about this, these are my wishes, don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And an out-of-hospital DNR or do not resuscitate. Those are the only two documents that tell paramedics not to do those.
And you've got
things.
To make sure they see them in time.
Exactly.
Yes.
So again, that's why it's really, really important to have conversations with family, with your neighbor, anybody that may be around if and when a situation like that were to occur.
So the overall message I'm getting from this is that you need advanced planning, you need detailed conversations with your family, and you need someone to help facilitate those conversations. Which is where someone like Joni Williams comes in, because this is her field. She's an expert in helping people understand their own wishes and communicate those to their loved ones.
I think you pretty well covered it, Kay.
Thank you so much, Joni Williams, for coming in today and talking to us about palliative care. I'm sure people will find this very helpful and it'll help them make some of those difficult conversations, which, as I keep saying, you can help them do that too. You can facilitate those conversations. Thank you again.
Thank you for having me.
I've been talking to Joni Williams, who's the palliative care coordinator at Mary Greeley Hospital. That's it for Local Talk, where we explore the people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. I'm Kay Patuk, your host for today. Today we had the regular monthly report from Susan Guiazda, Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames, who told us about the upcoming Yard Waste Free Days, the annual outdoor sculpture exhibition, and other important events and reminders for all of us who live here in Ames. We also heard from Emily Linden from the Adult Services Department of the Ames Public Library, who talked about two important and related evening programs now available at the library. You can find out more about these programs by checking out the events calendar at the Ames Public Library website. Our final guest was Joni Williams, the palliative care coordinator at Mary Greeley Medical Center. Our theme song is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you'd like to join our team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878. We'd love to hear from you. Or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends. And check us out on Facebook. You can also listen to this show and all our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. You can find today's show on our homepage as soon as we can get it up there. KHOI is now streaming online, where you can also find archives of KHOI's shows. And I want to remind you of our upcoming pledge drive coming up from November the 13th through the 20th. During this time, we'll be asking for your financial support, which is absolutely vital for the continued growth and success of KHOI, your community radio. Please remember that you, as listener, are the most important part of Local Talk. Your participation as an audience and your generous donations help make it all possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.